So we're sitting here with three new people who have not been on the podcast before.
So very special episode, obviously. And as usual, I'm Frederick.
I'm Anna.
I'm Mati.
I'm Afri.
And Fabian.
So three new people. Obviously, everyone around the table is parody people, but we're coming from very different parts of sort of the company or part with very different backgrounds, and we've come into the community with very different backgrounds. And I think talking about this sort of journey through like how you got started to where you are today can be interesting, especially with some of the people here.
Frederick, can you start? How did you get interested in this space?
I can do a very short intro, which is I was obviously interested in Bitcoin and stuff in 2013, 14. I actually bought an ASIC miner to mine S-Crypt coins, so Litecoin and Dogecoin back in 2014. And I was really like into the space at that point. And then I kind of, I lost interest a little bit, but also a little bit because I like founded a company, got interested in a bunch of other things and kind of left it. And then a friend introduced me to Ethereum like the start of 2016. And I looked into it and I instantly realized that like finally there's something that isn't just like a cryptocurrency. Like cryptocurrencies in themselves don't interest me a ton, actually. I think there's, I mean, it's obviously revolutionizing in many aspects, but it was never the thing that actually like really grabbed me. But building decentralized applications and like what we've now come to call Web3 is something that I instantly was like, this is actually really cool, and I want to like know more about this and get more involved in it. So I did.
What about you, Mache?
Well, I have sort of a similar story. So I did some Bitcoin buying, trading, whatever, very tiny amounts and very like 2011, 2012. So the price of Bitcoin was like $15 or something like that. But then I was, doing some things and doing some life changes and moving to Berlin. And I sold out all my Bitcoin while moving to Berlin to be able to pay my rent and do other things. And then kind of also left it there. And couple years later, I just started interested in like some low level stuff. Started to get to interest in Rust, got to interest in like parsers, among other things, and eventually ended up at Parity, or still left where one was when I joined, via the interest actually in the cerebral kind of programming that's not necessarily UI based or not isn't like a product for customers, isn't like a thing. It's more of an actual technology that's just interesting for this technology's sake. It was like different from what I used to do, and like interesting to me in that respect. The fact that it was also coming back to something that I was somewhat familiar with, mm-hmm. like years before, is made the additional perk, so to speak.
As former and still to some degree web developer, I can super relate to that world where when I was like only quote unquote a web developer, I could not see like any programming job that didn't touch the web. Like it was obviously you do web, like what is there else other than like I knew some people were working on writing drivers or like whatever. But it's like, I couldn't really visualize what that job was that you're not doing like internet stuff. And I think a lot of people actually are attracted to Parity and this space because you can work on core infrastructure and you can do really cool shit that isn't like building or like a SaaS.
Afri, do you want to tell us a bit of your story?
I was reading a book in summer of 2013. It's called Cyberpunks by Julian Assange, Jake Applebaum et al. And they had, this was like, it was written like a discussion, like we are sitting here and they are talking about topics, and one chapter was covering Bitcoin, and this was the first time I realized what Bitcoin actually is, and that Bitcoin is actually a thing, not interesting in both ways, technically and politically.
Yeah.
And I was totally stunned about the potential impacts on society, on banks and so on. And this is how I got into Bitcoin, and I started mining immediately. So I looked into Bitcoin, and it didn't work out at all because it was too difficult in 2013. And it was a time when Bitcoin was at around $70. And when you went to Bitcoin Talk and you were a new user, everyone told you, yeah, it's totally too late to get in, and you just missed it. And like, that's totally nice to look back at these comments from this time. And so I quickly got involved with Litecoin a lot. So I was deeply integrated into the Litecoin scene. And
when did Litecoin come out?
I don't know, it was around for a while, 2012.
Okay.
I think.
Wow.
And I got into the BitShares community very early, so even before it launched. And this is when I realized that my skills as a developer are quite useful. I was doing, they had some kind of bounty program, so they set up all tasks they didn't manage to do on their own for the community, and everyone could just grab the task, do it, and claim bounties. And that was how I got hands on my first crypto coins.
Cool.
Like, and they were paying ridiculous bounties for, like, I was maintaining the coin market cap API for ProtoShares, and they paid me like 8,000 euros just for, this was like a 5 lines of Ruby at a cron job and maintaining a node. So it was, yeah, I later used to be core developer for some coins.
You said earlier when we were talking about this that you lost interest in this space and sort of left for a while. And why was that?
Yeah, there was like this altcoin bubble in 2014, where like 7 new coins launched every day, and there was very few innovation and a lot of hate because there was a lot of money in this space. This was shortly after the first Bitcoin bubble, and there was a lot of money in space, and people are invested in different coins, and they started hating each other. Like Darkcoin people hated Monero people, they were hating, I don't know how the other coins were called at this time. And at this time I was core developer for Darkcoin, I think. And I eventually quit because I was totally pissed off about the Darkcoin governance, and I also decided to just leave everything behind and never look back at cryptocurrencies because it was really, really stressful. I'm quite a sensible person, and I didn't want to go on into this space.
A very toxic environment.
Exactly, and funnily enough, the same year, it was early 2015, I was contacted by some non-profit in Berlin. They were looking into blockchain research, and friends of friends recommended me, my name, because they knew I had something to do with blockchain, and I was doing, this was a non-profit organization looking into building democracy apps, decentralized democracy apps, and they were looking into different blockchain options, but needed some kind of expert. I was not really an expert, but I had at least some overview of that space, and this is how I discovered Ethereum shortly after it launched, and that was quite interesting, coming from this toxic altcoin scene into like a community on Reddit, for instance, that was entirely talking about technical aspects, about visions, and I was totally surprised, and I was immediately reading the white paper, and I was eventually assembling a new mining rig because I was totally back in.
So the enthusiasm came back, and it was back to square one, like starting the mining process all over again.
I love mining. I like the idea that everyone can participate, you know. It's like difficult for the Bitcoin, for instance, and it's also today difficult for Ethereum, but the initial idea behind that is pretty interesting.
I think it's what's made cryptocurrency possible. It's what made it what it is today. Mm. It is that ethos of everyone can participate and everyone is allowed to play.
You were very, very early on, like an Ethereum Stack Exchange moderator, right?
Yes.
Like, how did they came together?
And to clarify, Afri is moderator on the Ethereum subreddit today and has been from the start, or early on at least. You're also moderator on the Stack Exchange?
Was. I'm not anymore.
And has been involved in... basically every community effort in Ethereum for a long time. How did the Stack Exchange thing evolve?
Stack Exchange is a nice network of Q&A questions, sites for Q&A questions. And the nice idea about that is that everyone can launch its own site or propose its own site. And when Ethereum gained some traction in the end of 2015, someone proposed a Ethereum Stack Exchange. And I was totally in love with that idea to have a separate Q&A site for Ethereum, a technical Q&A site, because I knew that Ethereum will create some new ecosystem, a completely new system for developers around a technology stack that's completely different from everything we've seen before. This is why Ethereum Stack Exchange is also a very successful site in the space, in the network, and I think it was like the fastest site that's ever graduated on the Stack Exchange network. So developers probably know it. It's like Stack Overflow is the most popular site on the Stack Exchange network. And yes, I was very active in the beginning because I wanted to learn about Ethereum. I was also professionally involved with Ethereum, so I had questions. I had a lot of questions, and it was a perfect place to get answers. And eventually was proposed to be... I was nominated to be moderator, and I accepted it. And I think I'm still top three member by reputation because I had a lot of questions in the beginning. But I'm not using it as active anymore as I did 2 years ago. But it's still a valuable resource.
So my story of involvement just generally in blockchain is more recent. The first time, so I actually heard about this all, I believe, from Jutta Steiner, who's the CEO of Parity, a place where I now work. And I remember, I think it was around 3 years ago, I met her for coffee, maybe more, but I met her for coffee and she was telling me that she was getting involved in this new space. She mentioned Ethereum and she mentioned blockchain, and I'd sort of heard something about that at conferences, but I didn't, I'd always sort of written that off as fintech and just like something far away from what I was doing in tech, which was like video tech stuff. And so I just wasn't particularly interested in it. But when I heard she was going into it, I remember being like, oh yeah, this is okay, maybe I'm going to pay a little bit more attention to it. And then once she got really involved, I remember, I think it's two years ago, I remember starting to go to things with her and starting to understand a little bit more of like some of her friends were working on projects that were kind of interesting and had real world applications. I remember like supply chain management and transparency on blockchain. That was like obviously the first case where you're like, oh, I can kind of imagine this having an application that goes past just being a fintech product. And then my real interest in it started, I would say, like, so I started doing sort of tech salons at my house where I would just get a bunch of people together and we'd have conversations about different topics. And one of the topics was blockchain. And I was like, well, I'll definitely have to invite Yuta. And we started talking about her coming to this dinner, but we actually just started meeting a lot more, maybe because of that. And there was all these other topics that were coming up about founding companies and working in this industry and stuff. And as that was going on, I was definitely starting to be like more and more curious. And so I was like, okay, cool. Like, I want to find out more about this. And then I just realized that this wasn't just like a passing interest, which I had had for maybe other technologies, but this was starting to become like becoming mildly obsessive with this idea. And I didn't feel like from where I was sitting that I could really get into it and understand how it was working. And so I spoke to Yuta and we started talking about me potentially joining her and Parity to get more involved, to understand, to get a chance to work with some of the best people in the space. I mean, I thought it was a really cool opportunity, and I think I had something to offer in terms of adding some value to the company, and so I joined. And since then, it's been very much a learning experience, and I think this podcast is part of that as well, to like actually get a chance to think about research and then ask some really smart people about this stuff.
Yeah, so my story, I mean, it depends how far you want to go back, but I guess the first time I heard about Bitcoin, that I was still in high school, I guess. That was 2012. But then, I mean, back then it was just, okay, this is like nerd internet money. I don't know what it is. I don't care. But it got a bit more serious in uni, where I had a bunch of friends around me that founded the Bitcoin meetup at my university that I was quite close with, and it also started mining, and you know, quite a few friends that drove their parents crazy because of their energy bills and whatever. And I don't know, like, you know, just never really got serious with it, invested a bit of my very limited student budget, but always had an eye on it. But it was like basically the time that a lot of the altcoin fever, Mt. Gox, Silk Road stuff was happening. Like, it wasn't that interesting to me, I don't know. But I remember, like, I don't know, like the Wired articles, like the rise and fall of Bitcoin, where, like, you know, basically people were like, this is that, like, this was it.
Yeah.
It came up again for me in 2015, where I was working at Porsche in Germany, like in automotive, and it was kind of like my first professional experience, so to say, in the research department there. And I hated it. Like, it was so German, traditional engineering, and like so slow paced, and I was looking for something like, you know, like a very, very radical change kind of. And I had a friend, Björn, who's still with us in the company, like I knew from a while back, who just started with Parity. And so I thought, okay, like, this, you know, this sounds crazy. Like, I know a bit about it, but not too much. But you know, let's try this out. It's kind of like how I started professionally with it.
Did you? So I had this moment, especially when I first heard about it. I was hearing about it mostly on the news, or I mean, then I started to hear about it at conferences and with Yuta. But I remember thinking that it was really weird and kind of creepy. Like, I remember being a bit like, oh, it's like, I had this impression of the people who would be involved in it being just like little criminal, little like.
Yeah, not even criminals, but like, I mean, I knew a lot of people who were involved, like really good friends of mine who were involved very early on. But those were always the guys who were like, you know, not, I don't know, not the average shows, like more like the people who were looking for the new stuff, but also a lot of the people who were like, okay, a lot of anarchists, a lot of the people who were like a lot of my friends who were like super left-wing and fuck the system and like, this is the revolution.
And they wanted to buy drugs.
Some of them, I guess. But It was also a lot of talking. Like, I remember it was just a lot of talking. Like, going, for example, to the Bitcoin meetup there, like, it wasn't, nothing actually came out. Like, people were just, oh, like, this is the new shit, and it was just some Bitcoin fork that somebody called PandaCoin or whatever, and, like, everybody was excited about it, but there's no actual innovation going on.
So, something I'm interested in hearing this group's opinion on, Efri mentioned earlier that, like, the developer uptake in the Stack Exchange had great growth, and, like, obviously, like, this is what attracted me to Ethereum, is, like, the potential to build applications on top of it. So how has the developer initiative gone over the years? Like, how did it start, and how has it developed, and where do we think it's going?
I've been on Stack Exchange from day one of the private beta, and I was very active. I was always doing this in the night times in my free time, and whenever I was around, I was basically checking every question, every answer. I was even correcting stuff, proofreading stuff, improving stuff. And this for like 1.5 years, I was able to manage everything that happened on this site. And two things changed in 2017.
So hang on one second. Did you manage that because you are an incredible person and spent an incredible amount of time doing it, or because there actually wasn't all that much content?
Both.
What happened in 2017?
Yeah, first of all, we had so many new developers in the space that the volume on Ethereum Stack Exchange exploded, like to rates of 40 questions per day, so not a single person can manage it. As a moderator on Ethereum Stack Exchange, I was I had insights and site statistics, so I was able to see actually the graph going up, and so it was like nothing I was able to catch up in my free time anymore. And at around the same time, I joined Parity in the beginning of 2017, and I was hardly keeping up with questions, only tagged with Parity. So I was after managing for almost 2 years the whole Ethereum space, I was hardly able to manage the Parity support requests, and that was one of the most significant changes in 2017.
That's pretty interesting. So, I mean, there's obviously been a lot of developer interests from day one, and like you said, the Stack Exchange is one of the fastest graduating of all of them, which means there's some significant growth even pre-2017. But so at the start of 2017, this is before the price really goes up. Because the price went up like mid-2017.
May. Yeah, it kind of started.
It started in February, yeah. so it's a little bit correlated.
Was it correlated to the price? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of that came also through the whole Ethereum Enterprise Alliance and all these crazy announcements of like big companies, big names suddenly committing to this technology. And it's just brought in a lot of people and a lot of money.
Yeah, but also developers. So all these companies, for instance, joining the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, they have departments. Some of them are big enough to have their own blockchain departments, and they have their developers looking into all kind of blockchain solutions, and they also look into Ethereum, and they start building smart contracts, because that's something that has never been around in this form.
Yeah. So did the nature of questions change from like 2016, when it was just the average, you know, dude trying to look into what this was, to 2017, where, you know, maybe it's focused on trying to make money off this thing because the price is going up? Or it's because of enterprise developers entering the space. Like, did you feel any change in the community at that time?
Talking about Stack Exchange, no, it didn't change. It's just the quantity. And people had more in-depth questions. But, of course, like, communities with less technical focus, like the Ethereum subreddit, changed significantly. So there's always this rule, like, no market talk, no price discussion, no ICOs. But the Ethereum community used to be very technical at its core for all these years, but this changed this year.
obviously there are a lot of people just interested in following what's happening to Ethereum, and there's a lot of people around that are not too involved with the technical aspects. That's totally fine.
They're not necessarily interested in the technical aspects. They're interested in what's being built on the platform, or like what's coming, or like what can they do, and like as non-developers with it.
Is that still a rule on the subreddit?
Yeah.
You can't talk about ICOs and you can't talk about...
You can. It's a bit difficult. You're not allowed to... You're not allowed or you're advised not to advertise ICOs.
Okay.
So you can still discuss technical aspects. This often breaks down to people discussing their crowd sale contract.
Something I'm really curious about as well is... how have developer tools changed over the time? Because we at Parity, like, we're working on developer tools. We're working on, have been working on a lot of stuff over the years, and we're like ramping up those efforts to some degree and trying to build more stuff and help people and build libraries, etc. But how has this space developed?
Well, I'm actually not super aware of how it developed. I think one thing that did happen this year, or is happening, we are ramping up our efforts, but I think there comes like a great realization in the community that the way things are since, like, I guess actually since the beginning of this year, and since like this whole ICO craze, and people actually starting to build things, and the price is going up, and suddenly there's like crazy amount of money involved, and mistake therefore is more costly. That the way we build stuff on Ethereum isn't necessarily sustainable. And I think this also like kind of comes back to the influx of developers we have are not necessarily developers that are super security oriented. Like we have all the people who do come from the web, or, and it's kind of by design and kind of a fault of the design that, you know, Solidity is kind of advertised as similar to JavaScript reasonably, and then you can build stuff with the JSON RPC in JavaScript. And it is kind of easy and nice and approachable, but at the same time, it does create this weird like dissonance where this is not web development. This is not the environment where you move fast and break things, because if you break things, you can't fix them. Like, you cannot fix them. You have to have them fixed when you deploy them, which is a very different mindset. And I think we can see that, like, there's more than us, and there's like multiple initiatives to change the situation, to improve the situation, to look at how programming industries deal with analog situations. So like how NASA programmers deal with like the fact that, you know, the software they release has to work or people die. How people who program pacemakers build their software, because if they fuck up, people die. People don't necessarily die because of Ethereum, but, you know, there's like multiple tens of millions of dollars of damages potentially in the line. So how do you write software in this environment where your mistake can cost you a lot and it's not reversible? And I think the approach is changing, and we will see more effort put into things like static analysis tools for Solidity. I'm not sure if we will see many more like languages that would compile to EVM, but maybe. But definitely like more static analysis tools, more testing frameworks, fast testing, like anything that can like systematically improve the situation and like solve problems before they arrive, that don't involve necessarily spending $250,000 on an audit, might improve the situation quite a lot. And as far as the ecosystem itself is involved, I think this is like in like the grand scheme of the battle of ideas between like smart contracts with drink complete Ethereum versus super conservative Bitcoin, or Satoshi's vision is the only vision ever, you know, obey the religion, or or be cast out. Like this is a problem we have and we need to solve it, or we might lose the battle.
This is a slight switch from what we're just talking about, but I'm wondering. So we are talking a little bit about like the community, people who've become really interested, but there's also a bunch of there's also the side which is like the companies and the corporates and the people, these bigger organizations and bigger entities getting excited about it. And for better or worse, like it is happening. And I think you mentioned, Fabi, at one point this thing like where you could see when they got excited about it, prices changed, concepts changed around it. I mean, you have some insight into like what people are saying in that space.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of things change there, but like one big thing is like if you, I don't know, like went into an executive workshop like beginning this year, people were like, you just had to mention blockchain, people were excited, and this was like the new thing, and like people were like, oh, like tell me about blockchain, like this was in itself innovative. Now people are like, okay, like I do understand what blockchain is, but what's, you know, like they have like some sort of information, but it's often very like Ethereum is often already like the old thing, you know, like they already read about like some crazy stuff that somebody apparently developed that is like 10x or 100x better, and like have very like based on very thin information, you know, like have some sort of understanding. And yeah, I don't know, like it's I don't think it got easier, because before that it was just there was just nothing, and you could like just educate people and build from nothing, and now it's just a lot of misinformation. You know, but oh, like last week there was someone from McKinsey and he told us that, and then you have to say, yeah, but it's bullshit. It's just not true. I'm sorry to say that. So now you have to re-educate people often. Although I would say there's also a lot of smart people and a lot of talented people in some organizations, and some organizations actually build up quite, you know, quite good people and quite good teams and actually take it serious. But there's still a lot of
something I'm really curious about is I did a project recently with a big enterprise company, and I got in, and I was sort of expecting a little bit of what we're talking about, that they'd be excited about blockchain because it's hype. But that we would have to explain a lot of those concepts and like get them to understand what they could actually use it for. But I got in and was surprised to find they actually know exactly what their use case is, what they want to do with it, how they're going to deploy it. Have you found that like that is actually the case most of the time now, that they actually know their use case, or is it still like in this, like they know they want to use blockchain for something but not what?
Yeah, it's really mixed. I think like the gap between like the knowledge level of teams and companies is just massive. Like I have the same thing. Like I had this experience where you talk to people and they exactly know, like, you know, we identified these use cases, we think that makes sense, and you listen to it and you're like, yeah, I think it makes sense too, for sure. But you still have these people that come and they're like, so we heard you guys do blockchain. We heard it's the next new thing. Can we do something about it?
Can we also do blockchain?
Can we also do blockchain? Yeah. And there's no, like, you don't even, as like, especially coming from the core where you just have like these infrastructure pieces, like without knowing, like, since we are not in any industry vertical, right? Like we have this infrastructure that you can potentially build any application on top of it. So it's impossible for us to know all the needs in every vertical. I don't know necessarily anything about any specific domain. So having these like super generic requests of like, oh, can you build a blockchain for us, doesn't help us at all, because we don't know the needs of a specific industry. So having a team in that is industry that knows the industry needs, that we can work closely together, but it also like knows at least the basics of the technology, so they can develop their use cases and we can see how it fits into the infrastructure and whether we can deliver these needs, is like just crucial for any project.
Yeah. And can you make it blue?
Yeah. How about the delete button?
All right. I think we've covered some really good ground here. I want to say thanks to you guys for having this convo. I think we should have more of them. Actually,
there's so many topics. Like every person I ever talk to is just like, oh, I want to dig into this, I want to dig into that, and like ask more questions about this this aspect or that aspect. So we certainly need to do more podcasts with these people in the room. So thank you very much for doing this one. But more should be coming, and it's been super fun and interesting talking to you guys.
Very cool.
Cool. Thanks for having us.
And thank you, listeners, for listening.